you're serious about beef? At Vaughn's, we understand. Custom cut in-store by our experienced butchers, our USDA Choice certified beef is marbled to perfection. So the instant it hits your taste buds, you know you're eating the most tender, juiciest beef in Southern California. Stop in for USDA Choice beef ribeye steaks, bone-in value packs, just $5.99 a pound with your club card. So this summer, make the better choice. USDA Choice beef from Vaughn's. We do beef best.
Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
Hello, 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 and welcome. Did you notice we had a double countdown there? We've got some strange gremlins going on with this system. Anyway, you're here, dear listener. Hello, welcome. Welcome once again to another episode of the Confidence Alchemist radio show. With me, your host, Keith Blake More Noble, the Confidence Alchemist. And this week, we're talking about next level speaking. And we're going to be looking at confidence beyond speaking challenges, beyond stuttering and beyond stammering, which covers quite a wide area. So we've got people who will be talking about people who stutter or stammer, and also people who have more general speaking challenges. Is there a link between the two of them? Well, we're going to find out. And the way we're going to find out is by my guest today. I'm thrilled to be joined with a gentleman I've known for a few years, on and off. His name is Andrew Hodge. And I'll just tell you a little bit about Andrew before we introduce him. Andrew, he started stammering on his first day at school at the age of 5. But whereas many children go through that sort of phase and quickly grow out of it, Andrew was in the 1% of the population for whom that sticks. And it kind of got worse and worse, to the extent that he avoided speaking situations for many, many years. However, he has found ways to address this, to deal with this, to live with it, and to actually turn this round to his advantage. That's what we're going to be talking about a lot today. So whether you have a stammer or stutter, whether you know someone who has, or whether you just have other speaking challenges, this episode is going to be of considerable interest to you. So without further ado, please welcome my fantastic guest, Andrew Hodge. Hello, Andrew. Are you there?
Hello, Keith. Andrew Hodge here. And thank you very much for inviting me on your show. Fantastic opportunity.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thank you so much for agreeing to be here. It's good to catch up with you again. I should think, when was the last time we actually physically saw each other? That would have been, now this is going to sound as though we're just boasting and name-dropping it. That would have been when we were going around Nepal and Tibet 2 or 3 years ago, wouldn't it?
It was in Nepal and Tibet, and I think it was 2013, 14, around that time. And that was just an amazing adventure and accumulation of some pretty intense trainings that we both went through. And I know you were working with Chris Howard at that time, and it was all... You know, a period of amazing growth and personal development for me, and I think for you also. So yeah, it's nice to be able to look back in those moments and say, well, where have we come and how have we grown since then?
Yeah, that was good fun. Apart from the altitude sickness, I don't think that was a particular highlight. But hey, that goes with the territory. Anyway, so Andrew, thank you for joining me. I've given a very, very brief intro about you, but for people who haven't come across you so far, who is Andrew? What does he do? And who is he to talk about speech issues?
Gosh, who's Andrew? What a question. You know, I think I'm only just finding out that out myself, and maybe that's, if we're honest with ourselves, we're all on that kind of journey, aren't we, ourselves? Self-discovery, who are we? I think things really took a positive turn when I went on my first program for the McGuire program, whereas previous speech therapy hadn't worked for stuttering, you know, from age 5 up until 38. And really I was living a life of avoiding speaking situations, cycle of panic, just somehow getting by and accepting a life that wasn't very fulfilling, shall we say, but getting by all the same, as you do. And there's lots of things you can do without speaking, which of course I did. But it was on that first course that my eyes were opened that this was, it wasn't a cure, but it was so much better than all the speech therapy that I'd been dragged along to as a child and then laterally, engaged in myself. And I think I tried just about everything out there. And I think it was on the moment of about day two on my McGuire course when my coach took me out on the streets to do 100 contacts. That's meeting 100 strangers. And I wasn't even speaking at that stage, but it was just so scary to be with him and doing that. Mm-hmm. Of course, once you're given the tools and techniques and you do it the next day, but he's there to support you as well, your coach. And then you can actually achieve things that only a few days previously you thought were just unimaginable. And of course, on that course, I had to do several courses that year, and there were dips and relapses and all sorts of things going on until things gradually began to settle out. And of course, for me, the big question here was, well, once you're starting to be able to speak, the question is then, well, who's doing the talking? So I recognized that having lived under a rock for 33 years, I had a lot of work to do myself. And then, of course, you embarked on this amazing journey of personal development. Some of the courses you were on, Keith, you remember there. And there's never really an end to this, is there? It's always a journey and finding out, going back to your original question, who are you? And I think since I gave up my corporate job end last year, I started working on this, more or less full time. It's really ignited my passions, and it really feels like for the first time that, I'm following my passions and working to be the best speaker that I can be, and helping bring my experience to bear with other people who have speaking challenges. And that's really what I love. I love to see a change in people when they go from a place of fear and shyness, embarrassment, stammering, whatever it is, to a place of just getting their message out there. Stepping into their own confidence and radiance and actually communicating in a way in which they're really happy with. Yeah.
Cool. There's a few things that you mentioned in there actually that I'd like us to explore in a little bit more detail if that's okay. I mean you covered a lot there, and I got to say actually I know one thing. Our listener will be thinking is, hang on, Andrew's talking about being someone with a stutter. His speech seems absolutely fine. And I've got to say, since we last physically saw each other in Nepal, you have, I presume, done a fair amount of additional work, presumably with McGuire and so on, because your speaking has improved significantly since then. So. Is it all down to McGuire, or is there other stuff that we will maybe cover a bit later on, or what's the secret?
Yeah, McGuire was the first key, if you like, to the first door. But of course, there's all sorts of other doors and things you have to step through, and it's really not one particular thing. It's really repeated practice, and people might be thinking I'm not stammering, but there were a few almost blocks there, so. For me, it's not a cure, and for me, it's also that it can be situational. So when I'm at my best, my focus is on helping other people, whether I'm on stage or not, that goes very well. The times that where it can still catch me out sometimes is where I'm in the pub or it's a noisy environment. The kind of speaking that fluent speakers take for granted. It's a bizarre situation, but sometimes that can be a little bit more. Some of the triggers, they're a bit faint now, but they're still there. The habits that have been ingrained over 33 years, it would be surprising if they didn't pop up from time to time. But generally, when I step on stage or whenever I can just be myself, but be my full present self, give myself permission to be 100% Andrew, for the purposes of helping other people, then it's not a stammering isn't an issue. I still employ a breathing technique, and there's still some physical aspects that need to be practiced as well. So you hear an occasional big breath. That's me just doing a bit of breathing, and that just keeps my diaphragm in its rightful place.
Well, please do keep on breathing. Breathing is
thank you.
Considered fairly essential for most of us. All right, so.
Yeah.
So yeah, the three questions I've got from what you've said so far. I guess the first one is, sometimes we talk about stuttering, sometimes we sort of talk about stammering. What is the difference between them?
You know, I've heard different explanations, Keith, but at its root, it all comes down to the same thing. I think one was used a bit more in America, some a bit more in UK and other parts of the world, but I think it's more commonly recognised within speech therapy profession that it's all part of the same thing. And you know, some fluent speakers may talk about having, you know, brain freeze or stammering, stuttering, but and that's very common indeed. We forget a word, stumble our words, but that's not the same really as a fully, you know, habitualized pattern where there's actually been a cycle of fear and you've built up layers of avoidance around the whole issue. So yeah, that's stammering and stuttering. And as you said earlier, it affects about 1% of adults. Some people who stutter are very overt, so it's very obvious when they speak. But most people who stammer are more covert. So some people are quite remarkably good at hiding it. They may choose to avoid certain words or substitute words. They may avoid certain speaking, high-profile speaking situations. And there's some people where it's so mild that you almost wouldn't know. But that wasn't the case for me. in my particular form of stammering, it would manifest itself as almost an extreme silent block. So if someone asked to pick up the telephone and say my name or anything, actually, even just hello, I would pick up the phone in sheer kind of fight or flight response. And try and say something to let them know that there was someone there. Of course, no sound would come out. It would just be the eyes would close, the head would go down, the jaw was locked, and the diaphragm was frozen. There was no airflow. And eventually, so if someone wouldn't hang up on me, I would start this coughing to try and let them know that I was there. When I started my first job with BP back in when I was 21 after university, suddenly I found myself on my own desk and my own telephone just before the days of email and stuff like that. So that was a real baptism of fire for me. But yeah.
Okay, so stuttering and stammering, it's that whole two nations separated by a common language thing. So it's just
pretty much
two terms for the same thing. Thinking about stuttering, how does it manifest itself? What are the symptoms? I mean, is it the classic where somebody just, I don't want to demonstrate it because it's going to sound as though I'm taking the mickey, and I'm not, but it's, you know, where they keep repeating the same letter and they're trying to get the word out, or is that part of it? There are other aspects of it, or how would you explain it for someone who doesn't quite know what it is?
I mean, in terms of people who don't stammer or don't know people stammer, there are as many different kinds of stammering as the people who stammer, so it's hard to generalize. But when you look at how it's been portrayed on TV, you know, Ronnie Barker, Open Our Hours for comedic effect, sort of really kind of repetitions, that tends to be more common in children or how it starts off. But as I say, I think probably the best one was The King's Speech. Some people may have seen that film, really award-winning film a few years ago, King's Speech, you know, where King George, the sixth one was
that's right, yeah.
He was portrayed with that. The Queen Mother, as it was then, and a speech therapist from Australia helped him to at least partly overcome that so that he could do the radio communications to the nation. So it's portrayed in different ways, but the other way to look at this is you know, the bit that you see or experience, people that don't stand with it, but they see, is just really the tip of the iceberg. So you've got the physical avoidance. The person might look flushed or embarrassed or shy. They might have poor eye contact. They might be rushing their words in bursts as tricks and avoidances to get the words out. Or they may just be really quiet and not be saying much. Or they might have burning desire inside to say something, might be really frustrated. But really, it's the bit under the surface that is the more significant part, which we need to look at from the therapy point of view as well. And that's the whole issue of avoidance, the resultant cycle of low self-esteem, and all that does to you as well, the frustration, the guilt, the anger. There's a lot of psychological stuff, we call it stuff, that's all right, under the surface, right. Just like in an iceberg, and that's kind of 80% of what stammering is. So from a therapy point of view, you have to really, from a self-help point of view, you've really got to work on that. And unfortunately, for me, the more you have avoided situations, and with 33 years of avoiding a lot of speaking situations, I had a lot of work to do myself in that regard. So
I can imagine. I mean, I didn't grow up having a stammer, but I grew up. My story is I grew up painfully shy, so I used to avoid social situations and avoid meeting strangers and speaking to people I didn't know, all that stuff. I overcame all of that, reached the point where it's, hey, yeah, I'm confident, I can go and speak to people. So you go and speak to a stranger, hello, and what comes next? Because I've never got this far before. So I guess it's kind of the same once you get rid of that all the stuff that the stammering stopping you doing, it's all of a sudden, I can do these things, but I have no idea what to do now. Which can be, it can be quite a scary place in which to be. But just before we get into that, so with stammering, so how was it affecting your life? Because I know it can have a significant impact. I mean, what is life like? What sort of things do you end up avoiding, and how does that make life feel?
Yeah, well, it's different for different people. From my own experience, sometimes it was just missing out on the simple things in life, being able to, you're going out and asking for things in shops, asking for, I mean, one of the most difficult of all was asking for a train ticket or something through a booth. You know, we used to have these glass booths or a post office. Mm-hmm. That was horrendous with a queue behind me. That was probably the worst situation. That's the one I had to work on most since Maguire to kind of really overkill that fear. But it was things like job interviews were a complete disaster. And usually just the thought of a job interview would kind of make you avoid even filling in the application forms. Of course, I did approach myself to do it. But then there's another thing. Well, I mentioned the telephone. You know, this is something that most people take for granted now. But the telephone was an instrument of torture for me. Usually I would get my parents or whoever it is to answer that or make calls, critical calls for me. And then there was things, you're right, from school, the difficulty of asking a girl out for a date. You know, it's when you speak with that, contorted block, you really kind of, I really hated the way I spoke. So when I forced myself into situations where I tried to get something out of it, it usually didn't go well. So these are the sort of things that I've mentioned that after Maguire, I really actively sought out these situations to work my way through the levels of fear, to work my way through almost levels of overkilling these situations. So you're asking 100 people directions on the street, seeking out job interviews where I'm put under that sort of pressure. I even went to speed dating events, Keith. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't get to go on these anymore because my current girlfriend wouldn't quite understand that I was going there purely for the challenge. But, it's important to do all these things, Keith. And when the telephone rings, I'm the first person wherever I am to climb over people to get to the phone. And when I pick the phone up. And the reason for that is when I pick the phone up, I never get tired of hearing the sound of my voice just saying, Andrew Horde speaking. just like that, because that's something that, you know, I never had for so many years. And it's true. I like the sound of my voice. I like the way I speak now. It's still always work in progress. But I think that's the key. You know, people don't, people generally, speakers don't like to hear themselves record or on video. But once you've got over that initial embarrassment or self-doubt, these can be great tools to listen to yourself and get, you know, I went to, in my 20s, I went to a voice coach. And I've practiced and incorporated lots of different things from different sources. And so I utilized that in what was the daily fight against stammering, overcoming these fear and challenges. But it is something that I generally find you have to keep working at. You know, it's quite easy to sort of sit back in your comfort zone. So if I've not been speaking for a while, you know, you can feel that, almost feel that slight tension there. So it's important for me to get out there.
Interesting,
make that effort. But once you do make the effort, is it worthwhile?
Yeah, well, I can imagine it would. Just a reminder, dear listener, you're listening to the Confidence Alchemist Radio Show with me, Keith Blakemore Noble, the Confidence Alchemist, helping you transform your deepest fears and phobias into your greatest strengths. And in this episode, I'm joined by Andrew Hodge, who is, through personal experience, talking us through how you can develop confidence beyond speaking challenges, whether that's general speaking challenges or stuttering and stammering. Now, one thing you've mentioned several times, Andrew, is the Maguire program. And I know that's been a big key in your own development. What is the Maguire program?
Well, the Maguire program, Keith, is an internationally run program. It's been in existence for about 20 years now. Dave Maguire himself is from California. He had a stutter, and all people on the program have stutters. And he was frustrated with speech therapy, but not myself. And he went to train with an opera singer in Holland. And there was a Del Faro breathing technique, the same that opera singers learn. So he basically combined this kind of breathing, you know, deep breathing technique, the way the opera singers would use their voice, you know, that powerful way. He combined that with a lot of the psychology that was going on that he'd learned as well. So, and he'd worked with Joseph Sheehan, one of the pioneers of voluntary stuttering in the States in the 1960s, 70s. So this was really focusing on the non-avoidance side of the psychology. So really facing up to what you fear the most. Which for speaking is that when you actually, this is going to sound weird, but if you go into a situation and you have the mindset of, rather than trying to avoid stammering at all costs to hide it, if you actually go in with the mindset of actually advertising yourself and doing it on purpose, well, that's crazy stuff. But if you do that, it's amazing how quickly you can break that cycle of panic and fear. So the Maguire program, by nature, it's a pretty intense 4-day course, and we run these all over the English-speaking world currently, and some courses in different languages as well. But basically, it's distinctive from other speech therapy in the sheer intensity of the course. So, don't expect to ride in the park. This is serious boot camp type stuff, but we give the necessary support. So you've got tremendous resources of people who have been through all this before, and we don't let you out on the streets without giving you a sound foundation of techniques and things that will actually work. And then afterwards, once you've joined the program, you're free to go on other refresher courses. And there's a development program as well if you want to become a coach or a course instructor as well, which is what I did back in 2005, 2006. And I still go back to the Maguire program, partly to remind myself of where I've come from and to strengthen my own foundation, but mainly to help out, because it is transformational when you see people coming in on the first day and face the camera, they can't say their name or they get really stuck. And then to see them on the final day doing the farewell speeches, you know, it brings a tear to my eye even now. And that's why I do what I do, because it is... truly life transformational stuff when you see it in that guise. Yeah,
I can imagine it's such a rewarding feeling when you know that you've you've helped to give somebody the key that they needed to be able to unlock themselves and unlock their own potential. You can see what's now ahead for them. It's such an amazing, humbling experience, isn't it? Yeah.
I can coach people who've been in the McGuire program or people who haven't been on it, but by and large, if the stammer is a pretty deep in the person, then I would always recommend you to go on the 4-day course. You know, by all means, come back and see me afterwards, but it's really that 4-day course. If you've got a proper stammer, that's really, I think it's the best that's out there currently. It'd be lovely if there was a magic wand cure, but I think for habit things, it's not really, it doesn't really exist, I think. And for people that don't have that depth of stammer, sure, there's stuff that I can do with them, which is similar to how I work with people, fluent speakers at speakers clubs and Toastmasters. There's that definitely stuff that can be done.
All right. Okay. So, we've kind of covered your history and your background. We've covered what it's like to suffer from or to have stammering, the impact it can have on your life. We've had a look at Andrew? We've had a look at the McGuire program, which can help people.
Take a deep breath, can you?
Deep breath.
Breathe.
Yeah, breathe. Yeah. Oh yes. We talked about the importance of breathing, didn't we?
It's okay to pause as well. We are on radio. We think we have to fill every, or in conversations we think we have to fill every moment of time, and sometimes one of the most important things to realize is the power of the pause, which helps you as a speaker, but it also helps the listener as well. So
that is so true. Especially as any time when you're speaking, you're right. I've been trained speakers for a few years, and so often, and I found this myself when I started speaking. You're thinking, I've got to get through all this stuff. I've got to get it out quickly. If I pause, people are going to be looking at me and thinking I've forgotten what I'm saying and blah, 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 all this stuff. But you're absolutely right. It's much better to speak more slowly because you find you're always speaking faster than you think you're speaking anyway. So you slow it down a bit and give people time to catch up. And the power of the dramatic pause gives people time for it to sink in or all these sorts of things. And you're right, it gives you as a speaker sometimes some much needed, oh my word, what am I going to say? Where am I going next? Thinking time, absolutely.
And for people that are relatively new to speaking, as you know, Keith, are people that are maybe more sensitive, maybe more introverts, that's the way to go.
Mm.
I used to compare myself against, fast, fluent talkers, salesman types, extroverts, extremely charismatic and confident speakers. And I realized that it's not good for me to compete with these guys. You only compete by being yourself. You compete by being your best self, but you don't compete by copying them.
No, you're right. You're right. Be you. Because when you're copying other people, you're focusing all your energy on attempting to mimic aspects of them, which you can't do because you haven't got access to all of the information they have because you haven't lived the life they've lived. Whereas when you're just be you. And I remember early on in my speaking career development, or early on in my development as a speaker, somebody gave me advice, just be you on stage. And I was thinking, I don't know who me on stage is because me has never been on stage. I had terrible trouble with this. In the end, I stopped thinking about it. And kind of over time, it just sort of happened that there's no trying to be you. It's just you are you when you're not trying to be other people. So don't try to be anything, just be basically.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And that whole thing with the dramatic pause, I've got to say this now because it keeps going over and over and over in my mind right now. And if I don't say it, it's going to be going round and round in my head the whole time through this show. anyone who's watched the Rocky Horror Show will know the power of the dramatic pause. The classic line, I see you shiver with anticipation. Everyone's going, what? So yeah. Anyway, none of that was where we were going, but it's all good. A question I did have for you. So some people may be listening to this and thinking, well, it's okay for you because there was a way for you to overcome your issues. But my speaking challenge, the problem I've got, it's different. There is no way to overcome it. There's nothing that I can do about it. I just have to live with it. Is there such a thing as a speaking challenge that you can do nothing about?
Well, this is something that I think about quite a lot, Keith, and there's like a complete spectrum of speaking challenges. You know, people who've had operations on their voice box, or, you know, think of the challenges that Stephen Hawking has, for example. There's all sorts of technology and apps and voice technology things that are developing and becoming pretty good. I've come across a lot of these things. I think it depends on your expectations, and you have a choice, don't you? You have a choice. You need to live under a rock, as I did for 33 years, which is not very helpful. Or you have a choice to try and adapt and overcome, is the phrase that I keep coming back. Adapt and overcome. You know, what is out there that I can utilize to make my life a bit better than it is just now, get my communication out there. Whether that's working with technology, working with coaches, whatever it is, there's something that we can do to be the best we can, regardless of what our limitations, physical or mental, might be.
Mm. I love that phrase. Say that phrase again. There's always a way to
adapt and overcome.
Yeah, I like that.
Adapt and overcome.
That's.
Yeah,
I can see the power of that. That really conjures up the whole, okay, I'm in a situation, I can't deal with it, so I adapt to overcome it. Instead of bashing my head against a brick wall all the time, I do like that, adapt and overcome. Actually, I'm going to write that down. I keep in a wee book a list of key phrases that I like and read through them from time to time. They just trigger sort of things off of me, and that's definitely why I like that.
Well, I should credit. I did get that quote from a coach I was friendly with in the McGuire program called Michael Hay, another Scotsman actually, and that was his one of his catchphrases. He's a really good speaker himself. I've come out a long way. He was also particularly good at articulating. So whereas before, I could relate to this as well, because I used to really rush my syllables to get them out. I think he did it as well, because the way he would adapt and overcome was to really take his time and exaggerate and enjoy. You know, the way you enjoy food, perhaps when you're eating something, you really enjoy that. Or if you enjoy every syllable, then you're not compressing them. You're really enjoying the articulation and the sound of every syllable. And that just really resonated for me. So adapt and overcome whatever it is that you're up against.
Nice. I like that. Adapt and overcome. And that's great advice, not just for people with speaking challenges, but anything that you're doing. Adapt and overcome.
I think it's going with the flow, isn't it? Because whatever you're presented with in life, in work, in relationships, in your day, in the moment, whatever you're faced with, some of it's in your control, some of it's not in your control. I think it's just working with it, going with the flow rather than work against it. Sometimes that's
go work with what you've got rather than going, oh, if only I had an XYZ. Just work with what you've got, adapt.
Exactly.
That's cool. You said that for a lot of the 33 years, you were kind of avoiding situations that would require you to speak. So I guess that was kind of your strategy for dealing with it. What's your thoughts about avoidance as a strategy? Is there any merit in it at all, or is it basically pretty much the worst thing you could do? What would you say about that?
Well, I think it can be quite a damaging place to be when your avoidance is. Come back to that iceberg and all the 80% that's under the surface of the iceberg. I think you're really just building up layers of extra layers of difficulty for you by avoiding. I think it's just do the best you can. And sometimes when situations are too scary to approach, maybe there are ways to make a start and inroads into that. And you can you can go for a less challenging situation of the same type, or you can get someone to be with you while you speak, or you can just go to the situation, experience it, and not decide not to speak. You know, it's taking a proactive approach, I think, is much better than constantly being in this kind of fight or flight response. It is not good for health and stress levels anyway. And certainly, feeling like you're settling for the second best isn't a good place to be. As soon as you can start to make progress, start to make steps towards that, small steps at first, then you're heading in the right direction, and that starts to turn the negative cycle of destruction and panic into something altogether more positive.
Got it. Okay. Now, fairly early on, you mentioned something that's really important. It's come up a couple of times. Breathing, and also your states of breathing and state. I'm guessing you'd say these are critical things, really. You're controlling your breathing and controlling your state. Is that how critical are they to being able to deal with any kind of speaking challenges?
Well, I think you know as I do, Keith, for all speakers, you know, presenters, being in your state managing your own state is absolutely critical. If you want your audience to be moved in a certain way, you have to be in that state yourself. So developing the flexibility to control your states, and if negative thoughts or self-talk, as you mentioned, comes up, you have to kind of train yourself to, well, that thoughts come in, but then just kind of like a cloud passing by, let go of that thought and then do something like move and breathe, go for a walk, anything to change your state, get yourself into a more positive place rather than being stuck in the one state, which can lead to procrastination and all sorts of other negative states. Get yourself moving out of that. The breathing is, for me, I'm quite introspective naturally. So if I'm sitting at a computer for hours on end doing work or whatever, I would tend to be a little bit fixated on what I'm doing. And that can lead to quite shallow breathing. So I try and break up my day regularly by going for walks, going to the gym, also doing my McGuire breathing more, or any kind of costal breathing. People that do like yoga, meditation, it's all kind of different kinds of breathing, but anything that, you know, gets the diaphragm moving. And the diaphragm, that muscle under the lungs that separates the thorax from the abdomen, that muscle is the largest, semi-autonomous muscle that the body has. A semi-autonomous muscle is like when you blink your eyes. That can be controlled by yourself. You can blink your eyes, but normally it would just happen involuntary. So that's very much how the breathing works. You can control your breathing, but also it's going to happen involuntary anyway, without even consciously thinking about it. So giving yourself some space to get yourself centered, your breathing centered, feeling like you're back in control again, that allows you to choose what state you want to move into next. And hopefully a much more resourceful and positive state if you're going to be doing some speaking or trying to influence people your speech.
Got it, okay. As you say, breathing is crucial. Literally, without breathing, we wouldn't be here. But you're right, breathing can affect the state, your state of mind you're in and the results that you get. Have you got any... there's very simple kind of breathing exercises that you could share with us. Perhaps something we could, I don't know, maybe something we could all do now just to kind of help with our breathing and our state. Anything that you're able to share? I mean, I appreciate there's a lot of different breathing exercises, but something fun and simple we could do.
The McGuire technique is a fairly specialized technique and something that wouldn't necessarily be appropriate for everyone on the call. But basically, its essence, if you can find anywhere, and some people do meditation as well, somewhere you can get yourself centered so that it's you time. You can be sitting down if you want, and just allow your thoughts to clear while you monitor how your breathing is going. So you just focus on the breathing. and let other distracting thoughts go. I tend to put my hands on my ribs. You've got to watch your shoulder posture. You can do that now if you want, but your hands on your ribs. And just allow your ribs to really expand up and out. So things will be happening below the ribcage as well, the stomach breathing as well. But once the ribs start to activate, then you're getting more, you're getting a more dynamic breath. And this is where the opera singing, this is where the opera singers tap into this additional breath. Now, one of the key things is slowing, making your breath a deeper breath. And you can, as you focus on making it deeper, that will just happen naturally. But also, as it becomes deeper, it's important to elongate the breath. Because if you're taking your deep breath, then eventually you can hyperventilate, and we don't want to go in that place.
Once
you
can quite.
Slow your breath down, when you think about these free divers, can hold the breath for three or four minutes.
That's crazy.
How does that work? So I through Maguire, I would regularly get myself into a breathing pattern where I might breathe about two or three times a minute. But I can also do a 60-second pause quite easily. And I would pause on empty. It doesn't really matter for the listeners just like where they're pausing, but the best way on Maguire and other meditative techniques is where you're expelling the air, you're pausing on empty, and then you're just being there with the pause on empty. You're holding the diaphragm, but feeling completely relaxed and centered. Now, we also do this on the Maguire program when we're sat opposite someone. So we're working in pairs all the time. And that's where we're connecting the eye contact. So the eye contact happening during this long pause. You know, for people who stammer or have any kind of fear around communication or eye contact, this is an amazing, amazing technique. So if you can get someone to work with you, great. Or even if you have a mirror or a spot on the wall, you can focus your attention onto that, your eyes or the spot on the wall. If probably another person wants to do it as well. And you can just smile at that person, but maintain great eye contact without saying anything. But just you can have a metronome or some other timer on your iPhone that times it, like a 20-second pause is a good space to start off with, and then extend the time if you feel comfortable with that. And I would do that for maybe 10 or 20 minutes most days. I feel pretty powerful when I've done that. Another one that I do sometimes is I've got an outdoor pool I can go to at my gym. And if I can, it's a real test for me after maybe a stressful day, if I can go for a swim and then if I go underwater. So if I can get to the point where I can do a whole length underwater, holding my breath and just letting the air out gradually,
yeah.
It gives you a great feeling of the diaphragm becoming more and more relaxed. I think that when people talk about feeling butterflies in the stomach or a panic, usually that it's focusing the tension on the stomach here, what they call the stomach, which is actually this diaphragm, this diaphragm. The ancient Greeks had a name for this. It was called ex phrenos is the name of it, and they call that the home of the soul. But rather than the heart, it's actually the diaphragm, because all the nerves go in there, and that's where we tend to focus all our fears and our tensions in that place. When you think about it from an evolutionary point of view, that's where the fight or flight response, you get your diaphragm ready to move. If you're about to be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger, where you have to fight or flee, that tends to be what needs to happen.
Wow.
Of course,
that's interesting.
That's not really the response you want when you're in a speaking situation, because when you go out and talk to 100 strangers, when you find it was a revelation to me that you could do that, and actually nobody died.
Yes. Wow, interesting. So there's a lot in that, actually, a lot in what you've covered there with the breathing. So that's a practice. You say you do it for maybe 20, 30 minutes a day most days.
Yeah, but 20 minutes most days. It works kind of either first thing in the morning and sometimes last thing at night. Most successful people that I come across have a morning regime of some sort, whether it's going for a walk, or some meditation or something, just something to get you really really centered. And you can do that with your breathing and your mind, and it can all combine. Whatever really works for you. And I would try different ways and find the way that works best for them.
I mean, it does almost sound like a form of meditation in and of itself, the practice that you were describing. That's, wow, meditation, but with some additional benefits. Nice. True. Cool. All right. So you, I mean, I know you are going to help people who've got issues with stammering and so on, but you also help a lot of other people who don't have stammering as their issue, but they have other challenges around speaking. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What kind of people do you help, and how do you help them?
Yeah, well, last night I was helping some speakers at our local Toastmasters club and helping to sort of evaluate them. And what I discovered when I joined speakers club was I thought stammering and outward fear or speaking were two separate things. But actually, at its core, in the McGuire program is holding back, from breathing, holding back from saying certain words, holding back from eye contact, holding back from certain speaking situations. It's all holding back, and that I could see that with the fluent speakers that had challenges at these speakers clubs. So a lot of it is actually kind of identifying that is the main thing that can actually make the difference for them. Some evaluators will comment on the wording they use, the phrasing, certain speech tricks and techniques to sound good. But actually, at its core, I think for me is regarding the actual delivery of how they speak, it's very much about how they're showing up in the table stage. And at some level, people are very commonly they're not being their full selves. I think, Keith, I think you posted a video that you won some speaker award for, which was about the masks and people adopting masks.
That's right.
Yeah. Amazing video, by the way, Keith. That was a tremendous video. And when you can people can give themselves permission to let go of some of these masks and just stand in a place of their own vulnerability and just recognize that the best choice is to be themselves, so obviously be their best selves, then there's different aspects to that where they can stop holding back, can stop playing a safe game. They don't have to be a particular way. They can just really let go and have fun speaking, let go and express themselves, start making the voice go in different places. If you're a speaker that's had a really narrow range, that's holding back. You have to kind of explore the richness and the tonality of your voice, the high notes and the way down low notes. And also people sometimes are stood really with their hands at the side or doing throwaway gestures and doing meaningless stuff with their body. If they can stand in the one spot and then start to move, move with the voice so that the hands and the gestures are actually much more meaningful, then some magic starts to happen when they connect the movement and the voice. And it all adds up to that speaker being much more themselves, much more expressive, and sheer giving to the audience. So from a psychological point of view, they're also shifting their attention and worrying about their own ego or their own self or how they look with the video cameras on, shifting all that stuff onto just the attention is focused 100% onto serving the audience and smiling at them and giving up your all. I think that for me is the key. Something around that is the key. I mean, maybe not give them all that information in one bite-sized bit, but you can adapt that information to the speaker and show them sort of demonstrate practical ways in which maybe they were holding back, whether it's gesture, the use of the voice, or the eye contact, the smile, and maybe that's the one thing that was to implement that. And that's the thing that will transform their speech for the next time.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. Now, I know that you are fairly active in, I think you mentioned them already, Toastmasters.
How did you get involved in that, and how far have you developed in that?
Well, this was something that obviously would have been unimaginable for me before the McGuire program. But once I'd done that, that was one of the things that was recommended to do. So, of course, I didn't do it straight away, but within 6 months, I joined my local speakers club in York. And we went through the series of 10 speeches, as you do. Won a few competitions, which kind of surprised me. But then I found that there were other blocks around memorizing the content, like notes, which I had to work through. But actually, the thing that I enjoyed most, and what people seem to enjoy most and ask me questions about, was evaluating and coaching other speakers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a revelation to me. You know, as someone who hadn't had a crippling stammer for 33 years and hadn't spoken much, for me to be suddenly being, asked to coach fluent speakers, that still gets me today. That is quite a shift.
I can imagine. Yeah.
That's what I enjoy doing. I think when you enjoy doing something like that, brings out the best in you as well, doesn't it?
It certainly does. It certainly does. So you're now very much an evaluator at
yes.
within Toastmasters, yeah.
Yes.
Which if anyone, sorry, go on.
I was going to say Toastmasters is a bit of an organisation. For me, I don't get held up on the whole protocol around the thing, because if you're entering, you can even enter sort of world competitions for evaluation of speeches. I don't tend to do that, because sometimes it's almost like a game show. It's what appears to be a great evaluation on stage. I don't really care that much how I come across on stage. It's all about giving that person the best advice in evaluation and helping them to move up to the next step. For speaking.
Yeah.
So it's very much about serving the person rather than me doing well at competitions, which I have done, but it's not really the main thing. And it's other clients, including I love to help people at the early stage in their careers as well, or even school kids as well. There was a recent client of mine. We just worked for a short time together, but his mum brought him along, and he was really stuck about giving his first speech in the school, and it was to put himself as a candidate forward to be head boy at school. And of course, he was all embarrassed, and he said as soon as he spoke, he would go bright red. We worked a little bit with that and just gave him a bit of a structure of three things that he could work on, hang his speech around. And then we just practice him getting up in front of people to say his first line, or even just get up in front of people and actually not speak, but have the possibility of speaking, and see, just to watch as he did that more and more, he wouldn't get embarrassed anymore. He was still pretty nervous when he was still pretty nervous when he did this speech, but then it was great to hear a few days later from his mum that he actually been elected to be head boy, which he didn't think was something that was possible, because he was up against all these, in his view, really kind of eloquent, flashy, competent So I just love to hear stories like that, where perhaps the underdog, or perhaps the person who's shy, they might be brilliant at what they do, but perhaps they're shy, they hold back, and they're not getting success, they're not getting the message out there. And similarly, I worked with scientists and engineers in my long corporate role. And after McGuire, I became a team leader, actually. So being able to coach technical people to overcome these things, it was really, really great to experience that. That's what I love working with clients, where it's going to make that sort of a difference in their lives.
Nice. That's
nice. I was getting a bit excited there, Keith. I've probably taken you a bit too quickly there.
Excitement is good.
Just breathing, get myself centered again, and speak a bit more down in the chest.
So breathe, Andrew, breathe.
Thank you.
Cool. Well, Andrew, I want to thank you for taking the time out to come and join me on the show. It has been a fascinating discussion. I've learned a lot about what it's like to live with speaking conditions, and more than that, how sometimes fairly simple sounding steps can really start to open things up for you and help you to start to get that under control and set you on the journey towards being in control of your situation, helping you to adapt and overcome. Hey, there's that phrase again, adapt and overcome. And if you're kind of avoiding situations because there's something about your speaking, you don't have to do that. In fact, that's the worst thing that you can do. And there's always places where you can get help.
Hmm.
Yeah, cool. So Andrew, I mean, I know there's a lot more that we could talk about here. Unfortunately, time is never on our side with these things.
True.
But if anybody wants to get in touch with you, wants to find out more, wants to connect with you, swap stories, or find out how you can maybe help them or point them in the right directions, what's the best way for them to find out more, to get in touch?
Yeah, well, if they want to connect with me, the website is www.nextlevelspeaking.co.uk. If you put your email in there, I can send my 7 top tips. We have had some difficulty getting the website up and going, so if it's not ready for the time of this call, then feel free, people that are in the UK can contact me on my mobile number, 07855445541. I'm very happy to have an introductory call, find out what your particular challenges are, or that's something I can perhaps help you with. So, yeah, it's all about, I guess, taking that, whatever is for you, that next step.
Yeah, awesome. So just to give those details again, go to Andrew's website, brand new website that's in development, but that you should be able to pop your name and address and email address in there and get his it's a really comprehensive set of 7 tips. I've had a sneak preview of it, and there's some really good ones in there, and I'm guessing there's going to be a lot more information as the site builds up. But it's www.nextlevelspeaking.co.uk, or if you're in the UK and you want to have a personal chat with Andrew, give him a call on his mobile, 07855445541. Andrew, it's been a pleasure having you here. Thank you so much. Any final words for our listener?
No, I mean, that's great. Thank you for the opportunity again, Keith. And I also really appreciate, as well as asking you on your show, I appreciate all the work you do as well, because there's a lot of people out there with confidence issues, and I know you get great results with people with phobias and things like that. It's just great. It's a fantastic piece of work that you do here. So, yeah. Hats off to you. We're all going the same. We're all serving the same kind of client base. And we're all helping to change people's lives. So, yeah.
That's true. That's what it's all about. Thank you so much for that, Andrew. I really appreciate that. So again, just a reminder, if you want to find out more about Andrew, get hold of his 7 tips, see about how you could maybe work with him, or even just find out more about what he's about, www.nextlevelspeaking.co.uk. Or if you're in the UK, you can give him a quick call on 07855445541. Well, that's pretty much it for this episode. Once again, time is running out for us, as it always does. Thank you to my guest, Andrew Hodge. Thank you for listening. For without you, it would just be two of us here yammering away to nobody. So thank you, dear listener. Next episode's coming up in 2 weeks' time. As always, you can find out more about the episodes at theconfidencealchemist.com/radioshow. Where you can catch this episode, or you can catch previous episodes and find out about what's coming up in future episodes. And also, while you're there, just go to theconfidencealchemist.com. You can find out more about how I can help you transform your deepest fears and phobias into your greatest strengths. And you can get a lovely free guide to hidden secrets of confidence. That's at theconfidencealchemist.com. And that's it for now. I will catch up with you again, dear listener, same time in 2 weeks' time. Until then, take care, look after yourself, and remember, change is always possible. And when you change your mind,
you change your life. Bye for now.
Radio.
You're serious about beef. At Albertsons, we understand. Custom cut in-store by our experienced butchers, our USDA Choice certified beef is marbled to perfection. So the instant it hits your taste buds, you know you're eating the most tender, juiciest beef in Southern California. Stop in for a great deal on boneless USDA Choice beef top sirloin steaks, just $4.88 a pound in the value pack. So this summer, make the better choice. USDA Choice beef from Albertsons. We do beef best. You're serious about beef. At Albertsons, we understand. Custom cut in-store by our experienced butchers, our USDA Choice certified beef is marbled to perfection. So the instant it hits your taste buds, you know you're eating the most tender, juiciest beef in Southern California. Stop in for a great deal on boneless USDA Choice beef top sirloin steaks, just $4.88 a pound in the value pack. So this summer, make the better choice. USDA Choice beef from Albertsons. We do beef best.